Welcome to Sunday Sermons and other recordings from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Davis, California. Please visit our website at www.uudavis.org for further information.
Amazing. Cliff?
Welcome to this wonderful day of remembrance. I'm Cliff Omart, the worship associate for today.
And I'm Beth Banks, the senior minister for this congregation. And Morgan McLean, who is our minister for congregational life, is not with us in this Sunday, but she'll be back on Monday.
And our welcoming words today are adapted from Grace Meets Us Where We Are by Gretchen Haley. There is nothing you need to bring with you to be welcome here. No right beliefs or proof of citizenship. No eternal optimism or clarity of conviction. No boundless courage or endless expertise. You do not need to know what brought you here or how you will solve that problem you are turning over and over and over in your mind. You do not need to be already perfect or even halfway.
You belong in this circle where grace meets us and where we are, but does not leave us as it found us. Love lives in each one of us and yet is somehow more than everyone combined together. Love lives with us here where life pulses and where life rages and heals and transforms, creating us in this very day anew once again.
Come, let us worship together. If this is your first time here, we hope you will stop at the welcome table out in the welcome hall, where you will find a community of caring and sharing. This morning, you are invited to light a candle at the back of the sanctuary and write in our milestone book. If you wish, we'll add your joy or sorrow to this morning's pastoral prayer or the caring corner in the bulletin. Please let us know if you would like to connect with a minister or a member of the caring team.
And Cliff will be dipping behind our musicians to light the pillar candles and the first one for the sorrows that come with us into this sanctuary. And we may not even share them openly with others, but we know them in our hearts. And he is now lighting one pillar for the joys that also come with us as well.
The chalice will be lit this morning by Victoria Aiken. I found out this morning Victoria, like myself, is a relatively new member to the congregation, but she has been coming to the services off and on for a very long time. And she, I think, was glad to be in company of myself doing the same thing. So it's really nice to have her here. She's going to be giving a reflection later in the service. The chalice lighting words this morning are adapted from Attentive to the Path by Reverend L.A. McCrae. Let us companion each other through the journey of life. Attentive to the path and its challenges, illuminating the dark places and leading with love.
For the beauty of the earth, it just seems right that when faced with all the beauty that you see on this altar today for an altar of remembrance, and also the beautiful season outside, that we sing in gratefulness for the beauty that surrounds us. And so in body or spirit, I invite you to rise and to sing. And if you are seated next to someone who chooses to sit for whatever reason, please remain with them. So this is an altar of remembrance, which is a little different from what we have done in years gone by, but it has some similar things to it. It has the beauty and the time that was devoted yesterday late afternoon to a group of people to come in and construct it. It also has food on it, different kinds of food, some organic apples from the farmer's market, some persimmons that are shined up for you, and some dangerously pink pastries in the middle. And we have 80 of them, so please feel as if you can really help yourselves there. So this food will be for you also. around the world, and I don't intend to go through many cultures and many countries, because just know that even after the first service, people came up and told us stories about the cultures that they were from and how these themes were very familiar. That there are times, specific times, that we choose in our cultures to say we will remember those who have passed, those who have died. Whether they were really difficult people for us, really loved people for us, that we will take a time in community to remember them. Because it's much safer to do this in a gathered group of with love than it is to do it alone. That happens in many different places. Also, people enjoy food. Often the food of the beloved, the person who has passed, you'll make that food and taste it with others. Sometimes there's music or dancing, but always the sharing of memories. Always the stories. There have been a number of groups over the last 10 days who have met with me to tell the stories of people who have died in their lives. And one of the things I ask is, what was sacred about that relationship? Whether it was a difficult relationship or an easy one, there are often gifts that come to us from that relationship to help shape, to help form our life. And that is something I will ask everyone to think about today. But if you do have mementos or pictures, and you haven't brought them forward, I invite you to bring them forward now, and we'll take a little time. If you have some things to put up here, please come and decorate our altar of remembrance. So later in our service, there will be a time to speak the names of people in your life, many people in your life. You'll notice that there are two tables, one in the back there, one over here. They have pens, they have pencils for coloring. And we're going to invite you, we do invite you, to write a message. What would you want to say to the person you represented here? What would you want to say? And I'm going to invite you to write a message or draw a message, because sometimes drawing is better than words, and to bring it forward and to place it in this basket. And our worship associates are going to create a ritual later and burn those messages and return them to air. And so this is a substantial time for you to come down, look at the pictures, talk to each other, ask, well, whose is this? Tell me about that. And also to make your messages. So we're going to give you a few minutes. You should do more than just look at it. Come and be with it. And so some of us will sing, some of us will write, some will come and look. Please eat the fruit. Take the fruit. Please take the pink pastries. Remember, we have 80 of them. And enjoy. Enjoy this altar. Right now. This altar is made all the more beautiful by the memories that you have placed here. A blessing on their lives and on all of your memories. And we have had many losses in our lives, in this congregation and also in your individual lives that goes far beyond this place. And I hope that this time can bring a piece of healing, because you realize how many people here are woven together by love for each other and sometimes for loss, and a willingness to be with each other in all of that. And so, with that, we sing our children to their groups. The memories that you will hear today are from very brave people. Because when we speak from our heart, we are speaking with bravery. Not all of our relationships are easy, and many need to be untangled. And so, with that realization, I invite you to have open hearts and to imagine your own relationships that you brought mementos for or gave messages for us to have, and to imagine where the sacred is in that relationship. And to do that, I know you'll need to think, what does that word sacred mean? Imagine what is most central to your life, that if it is alive in you, gives you the very life essence that you love and need to live well. Imagine that as the sacred. And how did that relationship help to fuel that in you? So as you listen, imagine that for yourself. Because since what, the last 10 days, people have been answering that as I have asked them. And sometimes it takes your relationship to a different level, sometimes offering healing. And so with that, we begin.
Okay, so you heard my name, Victoria Aiken. Okay. My father, Jack, 1927 to 1989. Here is a tragedy. A child is born destined to passionately love her father, even when that man can be accurately characterized as the most horrifyingly damaging person to ever touch her life. To call him deeply troubled, neglectful, alcoholic, and abusive is generous. Nevertheless, he did his best to give her what pitiful love he could muster. It was thin soup indeed. And it came like sporadic sprinkles of rain on a parched garden. The irony that is almost laughable, except that it is so blisteringly cruel, is that this man was also the sole caring adult in the early life of this unfortunate little person. My father was a brilliant and creative man. He was passionate about everything, music, art, philosophy, especially poetry. He excelled academically and ultimately studied medicine. He fathered 6 children. A full life, rich with wonderful possibility, was his to only take. But tragically, he never did. Instead, he slowly became unraveled as he recklessly blundered and careened through his own life and the lives of his hapless children. He eventually abandoned us. It is not irrelevant that it turns out my father was a very closeted gay man. It was the 50s and 60s. Devoutly Anglican, he held firm traditional moral values, among which was that homosexuality was a grievous sin. I can ponder until I'm exhausted the enormous implications of this fact, and I will absolutely allow that he suffered bitterly. After all, unabating shame will destroy a person. But I will never give him a pass for doing the worst thing a parent can do to a child. He made her feel invisible. I didn't see my father for 20 years until one day we got a call from a doctor in New Orleans. My father was in a hospital, dying, all alone, of AIDS. My messed up, screwed up father, who never watched me grow up, get married, and establish my career, who never met his grandchildren, was going to really, finally, after all, leave me forever. I was sure I hated him, but there I was, flooded with heartbreak. But here's the thing. Remember those sprinkles of rain on that parched garden? Well, against all odds, that hopeful little garden not only survived, but she also gathered up and held to herself some of the remaining fragments of her father's failed life. Those fragments are now inexorably part of who she is today. My father was a physician. I am a physician. My father was a psychiatrist. I am a psychiatrist. My father adored Sibelius. The second movement of Sibelius Symphony No. 3 moves me to tears. My father was a choral musician. I am a choral musician. I still have his battered volume of the collected works of T.S. Eliot. And I, too, am devoutly Anglican. It has taken years for me to allow my heart to finally hold grief, hurt, anger, and ambivalent love all in one place. Surely this place is sacred. Surely it must be holy. Because for me, this healing is evidence of God's presence in our unfathomable universe. Amen. Now, I didn't put anything on the table because Luann is going to play part of that Sibelius piece.
My mother and I had a very special relationship. Deep, profound, nourishing. She was, and after her death is, a touchstone for me as I go through life. The scene that often comes to mind is sitting together in comfortable chairs during one of her visits from upstate New York, simply sharing time together. Our conversation ebbs and flows, punctuated by periods of comfortable silence, sitting contentedly, sharing a profound sense of love and caring. A particularly painful two-year period during my freshman and sophomore years in high school planted the seeds for our special relationship. She lost her mother, my 48-year-old father to lung cancer, and then her father. I was the youngest of three siblings, a sister 1 year older than me, and a brother away at college. We lived on a 10-acre farm, four horses, chickens, a large vegetable garden, and lots of chores to do. Our love and sense of trust for each other was deepened through family experiences, big and small, joyous and traumatic. I remember one night when I was a senior in high school, I had borrowed my mom's car and was dropping my date off at her house at midnight. Her older sister and her boyfriend arrived at the same time, pulling in the driveway behind my car. I decided to back out, even though it was very dark and the clearance between the cars was small. I will never forget looking in my rearview mirror, seeing the boyfriend frantically waving his arms and yelling something as I proceeded to sideswipe his car. It's like this movie that just keeps playing over and over. I will never forget it. I was horror-stricken. What was my mom going to say? How are we going to afford to fix the boyfriend's car? As I drove home through the midnight darkness, the love and trust in my mom's and my relationship began to push aside my panic. I knew what I needed to do. I arrived home. I tiptoed down the darkened hall to my mom's bedroom. I woke her up and told her what happened. We figured it out together. My mom was my refuge, my confidant, and my sage. I could share anything with her, and I did. Moving to Australia for my first job out of grad school at UC Berkeley was particularly telling of our relationship. While extremely sad I would be so far away from her, our deep understanding of each other allowed me to do it without regret. I felt fully supported by her. Her dear neighbor, Freddie Mowers, who watched me grow up, move to California, and then to Australia, said, "Look at it this way, Dorothy. Wherever he moves now, he's going to move closer to home." My mom was 86 when she died after a year's battle of colon cancer. I received a phone call from my sister one morning saying I had better come to the family home because my mother was fading. I was able to get a seat on a plane for upstate New York that morning. And before I left for the airport, I talked briefly to her on the phone and said I was on my way. I got to her house near midnight, and she was still alive, but not really conscious. I held her hand and told her I was there. She died about an hour later. She knew I was there. To me, the most telling thing about the depth of our relationship was that when she died, the only feeling I had was deep sadness that she was gone. No regrets. No, I wish I'd said X, Y, or Z. No wishing for more time together. Simply pure sadness. It was and is a wonderful feeling that will stay with me for the rest of my life.
I invite you into a time of prayer and meditation. These words from the pen of Leslie Takahashi. In the daily weave of our lives, those who have died are still strong and guiding threads. Theirs is the golden glimmer, or perhaps the brilliant red, or the melancholy blue. But still, they are a part of the whole cloth of our lives. They are the ancestors, the goers before. And through this, we know immortality. In the hour or two of the rush of our daily lives, they travel with us through something that they taught us, which is now ours to do. Through something they loved, which is now ours to carry out. Through something we shared, which is now ours alone. And not yet only ours. Through this we know immortality. In the minute-to-minute grasp of where we are, we remember the joys our departed gave us, which opened us to hope, the sorrows we knew together, the life shared, which is now ours to steward. Through this, we know immortality. They are more than remembered. They are memory itself. For what we love lives on in this way. Our beloved dead accompany us through our life, their words and their wisdom our guide, their humor our relief, their restless concern for the world our charge. Through them, we know immortality. Amen. And blessed be. The pillar candle of sorrow, hoping that our sorrows have been lightened by our time together, and the pillar candle of joys, and may we take an abundance of joys with us, and the chalice. In the hope that you have heard something here today that you can take with you for strength into the week ahead. I invite you to join. Either hands or shoulders touch a shoulder, take an elbow, and remember that after this service, there are tacos waiting for you outside, and they, I've heard, are delicious.
I do not know where we go when we die, and I do not know what the soul is, or what death is, or when, or why. What I know is that the song once sung cannot be unsung. And the life once lived cannot be unlived. And the love once loved cannot be unloved.
These words by Ken Collier. And let this congregation say amen.
Amen.